Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
From the spiritual values of the boundary waters of northern Minnesota, we head to the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, as big as Rocky Mountain National Park, with some exciting differences. Take the plunge as the adventure continues as we explore our National Park of the Week, when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wildside News.
A great national park system is made up of an extraordinary panoply of different opportunities, from the national park, the grand parks like the Yellowstones and Rocky Mountain National Park and others. And there's a unique park up in Wisconsin that some people have heard about. And joining us now to talk about the many splendors there is Neil Hauck, who's the Assistant Chief of Interpretation and Education at the park. Neil, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, now this is a sort of mid-November, and it's in northern Wisconsin. Give people a sense of what's happening in northern Wisconsin on this day.
Right now?
Sure.
Well, it's kind of cold and gray. Most of the leaves have fallen from the trees, although I can look out my window and still see a few leaves clinging on for dear life. But it's the fall has come and pretty much gone, and now we're on that slippery slope towards winter. We had our first snow flurries last night. I guess we're having a winter storm watch for tomorrow, so we're here, starting to get ready for our winter season.
Here you go, huh? I can imagine snowmobiling would be kind of a popular thing to do in your park, seashore.
Well, it's snowmobiling, but not as an end in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in the Apostle Islands, the National Lakeshore encompasses 21 of the 22 Apostle Islands here in the western end of Lake Superior. We also have a 12-mile stretch of mainland shoreline. And as we get into the winter months, the surface of the lake starts to freeze over. And by mid to late January, the ice cover gets out to the closest islands, and by February and March, the ice cover gets out through about halfway through, and in some years, all the way to the outer islands. And what's significant about that is a lot of local people like to ice fish on Lake Superior, and so they use snowmobiles and four-wheelers to cross the frozen surface of the lake to get out to the best fishing ground.
You're not crossed with a lot of designated snowmobile trails in the park, but once the lake freezes, then it becomes kind of probably an open zone.
That's right. And our park boundary goes out about a quarter of a mile from the edge of the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's just been a little over a year ago that we had special regulations enacted that that legalized the use of snowmobiles within our park boundary.
Hmm.
Primarily for safety reasons, because that's generally where quite often the ice was there and not out in the center of the channel.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get to the fishing grounds, the fishermen would have to snug in close to the islands to get around certain areas.
Well, it's a very interesting park because it literally is composed of 21, 22 different islands. Why don't you give people kind of a visual of what makes up this park?
Well, the islands are all heavily forested, although that hasn't always been the case. You might think that being secluded on an island out in Lake Superior would have protected the forest from being cut down, but that actually, the lake made the island resources the most accessible 150 years ago, before there were roads and railroads in northern Wisconsin. So the forests that were available to the lake were some of the first to fall under the axe. The white pine was particularly in demand at that time. And so most, if not all, of the islands have seen logging activity over the last 100, 150 years. But most of that activity ended more than 50 years ago, and so the forests have regenerated through a process that we like to call rewilding, whereas in the 1930s, the area looked pretty devastated. Now, upon first look, you might think that the islands had never been logged at all. The forests are that healthy and that thick. So these are large, low islands, varying in size from 3 acres to more than 10,000 acres. And the highest of the island goes up only about 500 feet above lake level. So they're broad, they're green, they're rather low, and they're trimmed with spectacular features like beautiful white sand beaches and fabulous red sandstone cliffs.
And then how about the land side?
The mainland unit is also quite popular, you know, for people who don't have the wherewithal to get out to the islands or don't have the time in order to do that. It's very popular for people to, there are two places that you can drive into and have an opportunity to walk on the beach, visit a historic site. Commercial fishing is a story that we tell a lot in the park, and we have a commercial fishing museum at one of our mainland locations, and we also have a beautiful trail that goes along about 4 miles of the mainland shoreline and goes across the top of the cliffs where we have one of our most spectacular sea cave concentrations, and that's right on the mainland and a very popular place for people to visit, both on foot by way of the trail and by way of the lake. It's a very popular place for sea kayakers to go on calm days to see the caves and to take their boats back into the recesses and explore.
Being a lakeshore park, a national park, there's a lot of ways for people to get out and experience the diversity of nature that exists within this lake.
Being a lakeshore, one of the main reasons the area was established was because of the fabulous opportunities for waterborne recreation. And sailing has been popular in the area for many, many years. Power boating is quite popular. Over the last 20 years, the use of sea kayaks has just mushroomed in the area. And we see thousands of sea kayakers that take advantage of the protected waters between the Apostle Islands to island hop and visit some of the various locations in our park. A really popular thing for a lot of our visitors, realistically, many people get here by car and may not be ready to, to make the jump to the lake, or they don't have their own boat. So there is the Apostle Islands Cruise Service is the park concessioner, and they provide a variety of sightseeing cruises from May to October that give people an opportunity to go out around the islands. And they also provide a couple of trips that make stops at specific islands so people can get off to hike around, to go camping, or to visit a lighthouse. And then, as we started out talking about wintertime, when the lake freezes over, you're able to walk out to an island or snowshoe or cross-country ski.
Oh,
or get out there on a snowmobile.
One of the things I think sounds so intriguing, the concept of hopping in a, let's say, a sea kayak, and going out to the islands is really very intriguing, and from what I understand, people can do that and then camp.
Yeah, camping is available on just about all of the islands. I think we have 64, 65 campsites in the National Lakeshore right now. Almost half of all the camping that takes place in the park right now is kayak camping. People coming up and loading up a sea kayak with their gear and island hopping from point to point. A lot of people come up for a real basic trip is 3 days and 2 nights, and that enables you to visit the inner ring of islands. More adventurous folks will take 4 or 5 days and visit some of the outermost islands. Generally, the Apostle Islands are about 2 miles apart from each other, and they vary from one, the closest is just a little over a mile offshore. The farthest is about 25 miles offshore.
That's a serious journey. Do they have to make reservations, or is it kind of first come, first serve, or how does that work?
Well, we do have a reservation system for our campsites for groups of 1 to 7 people. Right now, the way we administer it is you can call up no earlier than a month before the start of your trip. You can reserve specific sites on specific nights. So you do need to figure out an itinerary that you'd like to follow. Call up, make your reservation. Right now, the only cost there is a $15 administrative fee for camping permits. We don't charge a nightly fee, although that will be changing in 2007. So you figure out your itinerary, get your reservation for, you know, the series of sites that you want to use. And obviously, if you're in a sea kayak, you are dependent on the weather, wind, and wave conditions. We have a saying that we use up here, it's the lake is the boss. When the wind comes up and the waves get big, you just don't go out. And we take that into consideration with folks who plan their trip. We just ask them to make their best guess on, you know, where they would like to be. And then if they get stuck somewhere windbound, somewhere along their itinerary, generally if the conditions are bad enough that you can't leave your campsite, they're also bad enough that no one's going to get to your campsite. So everybody's trip gets changed.
You also have an interesting feature there, and that is the black bear, and you have some legendary numbers. Tell me, first of all, for people who are heading off kayaking on some of these islands, you know, black bears are something you definitely have to take into consideration. Are they on the islands themselves, the black bear?
Right. It's not necessarily intuitive to think that bears are on the islands. You know, most people are familiar with the fact that there are bears in Wisconsin, but they think that by going out to the islands, they would be avoiding running into the bears, and that's not necessarily the case. The largest island in the National Lakeshore is Stockton Island. It has a little bit more than 10,000 acres, and it's home to one of the densest black bear populations in the United States. There may be as many as 30 to 40 bears living on Stockton Island at any one time. In recent years, the numbers have been closer to 20 or 25, but that's still a significant number of bears for an island that size. And so we go through a very careful process with helping the people plan their trips so that they're, A, familiar with the fact that they'll be finding bears out on the island, and B, what they need to do to properly store their food so that they don't encourage bears to come into the campsite.
What do you tell people to do?
Well, for islands like Stockton Island, we provide bear-proof food storage lockers at each of the campsites.
That helps.
Large metal boxes that clip closed so that the bears can't get into the food. Some of our more remote islands don't have the food lockers, so we do advise people of the need to take along rope and stuff sacks so that they can hang their food up in the trees away from the campsites. To help train the bears to avoid the campsites, you know, we ask people that if they see a bear within 50 yards of a campsite, to make lots of noise, appear as large as possible, yell at the bear, do what they can to let the bear know it's not welcome in the area. When people encounter bears out on the trails away from the campsites and other visitor use areas like docks and picnic areas, then we ask them to respect the fact that they're in bear territory and to just slowly, quietly back away, leave the bear alone, and let it go on about its business. Trying to get the word across, or give the impression to the bears that there are certain areas that they're not welcome in at certain times, whereas other areas they're free to be in and just be bears.
We're talking with Neil Houck, who is the Assistant Chief of Interpretation and Education for the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore Park up in northern Wisconsin. What's your nearest big town?
Well, the closest large town is, it's the twin ports of Duluth, Minnesota, and Superior, Wisconsin, at the extreme western end of Lake Superior. It's about 90 miles west of our location.
Mm-hmm. A rather interesting aspect of the park that certainly fascinates a lot of people, and that is the lighthouses. You have quite a record collection there.
Yes, that's right. We have light stations on six of the islands in the National Lakeshore. And depending on how you count the towers, we have at least eight of those. We have more lights than any other unit of the National Park System. All six of the light stations are included in the National Register of Historic Places. And they are our responsibility to care for them and maintain them.
They're open to the public.
We try to keep a number of them open to the public during the summer months. We generally have a uniform ranger interpreter at our Raspberry Island Lighthouse. That's the one that's easiest to get to, and it's the most heavily visited lighthouse. Usually from 5 to 10,000 people a year will get a tour of that lighthouse. And then we usually also have lights at Sand Island, Devil's Island, and Michigan Island, also staffed by park volunteers, so we can make those available for the public to visit from June into September.
Well, now, Neil, from what I understand, you've been at the Apostle Islands for about 20 years. That's a lot of time to spend in one national park. In that time, one really gets to know the place. Kind of on a personal level, go ahead and tell us what you find that really speaks to you as an interpreter and a human.
We did a visitor study about a year ago to learn more about the people who are coming to the Apostle Islands. And one of the things, you know, that we asked people, you know, is what sorts of things that they did when they come here. And, you know, the top responses were sightseeing and walking on the beach. I guess I have to put myself in the category with most everybody else. You know, walking on a beach is one of my favorite things to do up here. And, you know, we've got beaches on the mainland and on most of the islands that are spectacular. One of my favorites is the Julian Bay Beach out on Stockton Island. It's about a mile and a third long. It's a beautiful white sand beach, and it's remarkable for its singing sand, sand that squeaks when you walk on it. And it's, you know, every time I get to Stockton Island, I make a point of getting over to Julian Bay, walking on the beach, snorkeling out to a wreck site that's only a couple hundred yards offshore. It's just a great place to visit. Probably another one of my favorite places is, I think I mentioned some of the sea caves that we have along the shoreline here. Probably the most accessible sea caves are near our mainland unit. These are, it's a line of cliffs made out of reddish sandstone that's more than a billion years old. And the very thinly bedded sandstone gets eroded into spectacular features by the wave action that pounds the cliffs. And you can walk along the top of the cliffs and look down at the caves. I like to pick calm days in the summertime, take my canoe out to the sea caves and just sit inside the caves and be rocked around by the gentle waves and listen to the sounds of the lake gurgling back into the deepest recesses of the cracks and fissures in the rock. And I love going out there in the wintertime once it all freezes up and you've got a tremendous, beautiful reddish sandstone bordered by the crystal white ice and snow and blue sky up above. It's just an amazing scene. And when we do get ice to walk on, you know, we get several thousand visitors in the months of February and March taking advantage of the opportunity to get out there at that unique time of the year.
Since it's winter is coming and ice fishing is such a popular sport, when can people get out there and do that, and what kind of fish are they going to catch?
Starting in about a month, the ice will be forming up in the shallowest portions of the bay, just off of the Bayfield Peninsula. It usually doesn't get out to the area around the Apostle Islands until about mid-January. And usually by late January, early February, the inner group of islands is usually the channels in between those islands get ice covered with enough ice, 6, 8, 12 inches of ice, that the ice fishermen will be heading out there. And usually what the ice fishermen are after are the lake trout. They'll take their ice augers out and go bobbing for lake trout in the waters off of the islands.
When people want to find out more about the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, what's the best way to do so?
You can check our parks website. It's part of the National Park Service website, which is www.nps.gov/APIS. And that'll take you to our parks homepage with links to a lot of specific information about camping, campgrounds, procedures to get camping permits, lots of information about our lighthouses. We have excerpts from the old logbooks stories of the lighthouse keepers on our website, which are a lot of fun to read. Calling the park, we're happy to answer questions. Our phone number is 715-779-3397 from 8 to 4:30 most days. There's folks here in the office that will be happy to answer questions, and we'll, you know, be glad to send responses to mail requests for information as well.
Well, Neil Houck, Assistant Chief of Interpretation and Education at the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, I want to thank you for sharing the information about your park and lending your voice to the Wildside News.
Glad to do it. Always happy to talk about the Apostle Islands.
It's my impression that Americans are rewilding their spirit, revaluing their lands, and reawakening to a vision of a united people who truly cherish life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The signs of change are subtle, but showing up. Let's keep this momentum going. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next week or anytime on the archives when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News. Thank you.